Hey, Unnaturalists, I'm Andy.
And I'm Ryan.
And welcome to Unnatural. I'm just self-conscious because I noticed every time I start the episode, I don't know if you've noticed this, and I say, hey, Unnaturalists, I cock my head a little bit. Like, hey, Unnaturalists.
You've
noticed that?
There are just some things that only the physical body can emphasize.
Yeah.
Like you can hear it, you know, if somebody goes, hey, everybody, you know, mm-hmm. like you can hear yeah. the mouth turn up. You can hear the smile behind yeah. it.
It's funny because that's probably one of the only times I'm going to be smiling during this podcast, because this one, it's a rough one. And it actually takes us back to my home state of Iowa. In fact, I remember this one quite well. As I was working local radio at the time in the town of Waterloo, and I was on the air when this news began to break. The small town of Parkersburg is just a blip on the map with only 2,000 residents, and it's surrounded by corn and soybean fields. In fact, it was nearly wiped off the map back in 2008. When an EF5 tornado hit the community really hard. It killed 9 people and it resulted in catastrophic damage to the town's infrastructure. But the town almost immediately picked itself up by the bootstraps and began to rebuild, led in large part by their hometown hero, Ed Thomas. Ed was the high school football coach, Ryan, and he had won multiple state titles over the years, and he coached several players who would end up in the NFL. In short, Ed Thomas was a larger-than-life figure. He was a big fish in a small pond in this quiet town of less than 2,000 people. But only a year after he helped rebuild the place that he called home, Ed would be gunned down in shocking fashion by one of his own, right in front of his players, leaving an already reeling community devastated beyond recognition. This is the story of the murder of Ed Thomas. This is one I've had circled for a while because, like I said, I remember when this one took place and there was a lot of shit going on at this time. My dad had just died. The whole region of this part of Iowa had just experienced a 500-year flood. My mom's house got flooded. It was just like we had to be evacuated by boat.
With plagues?
It was just, it's one of those things where you just remember that whole time period. And this was one of the things that was going down then. So Parkersburg is a small town in north central Iowa, around 25 minutes northwest of the nearest city of Waterloo. It's one of those small Midwest towns where everybody knows everybody. Kind of cliche, but it's true. And for Ed Thomas, there was nowhere better on earth. Ed was born in 1950 in Oskaloosa, Iowa, and later grew up in the town of What Cheer. Yeah, you heard me right. It's a town called What Cheer. W-H-A-T-C-H-E-E-R. What Cheer. It's just such a weird
name. Is it built on grumpy old men?
I don't know. So he was the oldest of 5 kids, and he grew up with an alcoholic father who didn't really play a pivotal role in his life. Luckily, though, Ed found a positive male influence at a young age, and that was his high school football coach, a man who would become his mentor and someone he wanted to emulate later in life. Ed excelled in sports, and he played quarterback on his local high school football team. He graduated from the University of Northern Iowa in 1968 and almost immediately got into coaching. He was a teacher and the head football coach for the Applington Parkersburg Falcons for 37 years. And throughout his tenure, he became known as one of the best coaches in the state. He was even recognized on the national level as the 2005 NFL High School Coach of the Year. He won a lot. He amassed 292 wins, along with two state titles. But what he cared more about, Ryan, more than winning, was connecting with his student athletes on a personal level and helping shape them into the people that they would go on to become after graduation. I've had coaches like that in my life. I was not a very good athlete, but I have had coaches in my life who, you know, were just really great people and great mentors. And I think in high school, that's really what it's all about. It's not necessarily, you know, how great you are at the sport you're playing or coaching. It's connecting with people. And he was one of the best there was at that. His son, Aaron, who also played for him and would later become the coach himself, would later say of his father that he was demanding, but the one thing he did better than anything else was build relationships. He said that if a young person knows you care about them, it's easier to hold them accountable, which I feel like is very true.
It's hard to be held accountable by someone that you don't know has the best interests at heart.
Yeah, that you don't trust. And looking back at being younger, if I knew an authority figure had my best interests at heart, like you said, I was much more inclined to hear them out, to hear what they had to say. And he was a master at that. He had an immense amount of respect from his former students and players. But as it is with anything else, sometimes there's going to be a few bad apples. And one of those bad apples was a former student and player underneath him, Mark Becker. So Mark's mom, Joan, moved to Parkersburg when she was a junior in high school. Her future husband, Dave, also attended the high school, and he was a senior and also a captain of the football team. And it was actually Coach Ed Thomas himself that would introduce the two of them, saying that they would make a good couple and that they should go out. This sounds so small town, but it's such a great story because they took his advice and they've been married ever since. And apparently he did that for a lot of people. He was kind of a matchmaker. And Dave and Joan got married a few years after high school, and they had three sons. All of their sons loved football. It was kind of a thing in that town, including Mark, who started playing at a very young age. By all accounts, Mark had a fantastic childhood and even had Jan Thomas, Ed's wife, as his Sunday school teacher growing up. And Jan would later say that Mark was a great kid who came from a loving family. But things began to take a turn as he entered his sophomore year in high school. He began to withdraw from his group of friends and started kind of dabbling with drugs. It got to be such an issue that Coach Thomas even had to sit him out for a few games as a disciplinary action. But he still never gave up on Mark, and he didn't kick him off the team entirely. But what Coach Thomas did not know, nor did Mark's parents, was that Mark was beginning to show the signs of schizophrenia. I was looking into this, and it makes sense because one of my friends has schizophrenia. And for men, it starts to appear late teenage and really takes into effect when they're in their 20s. Mark did graduate from high school, and he even went to a local college to play football. But things quickly devolved into a downward spiral for him. He began using heavier drugs like methamphetamine, which can trigger deeply disturbing episodes for someone who is already suffering from a mental disorder like schizophrenia. Paranoia, delusional tendencies, all of that is kind of heightened when you combine meth with this mental disorder. But Mark did detox and he got better. And he actually moved a couple hours away with his brother. And his family thought that was good for him to kind of just get away from your hometown and experience something else. His family members really believed that he was getting on the right track. But then came that tornado I told you about in the beginning. And in 2008, an EF5 tornado, which, by the way, is the most powerful tornado there is, ripped through the small town of Parkersburg, Iowa. Along with the 9 people who lost their lives that day, the entire town was decimated, including where the Thomases lived. Ed and Jan basically lost everything. Their home was destroyed. Their cars were obliterated, and both of their workplaces were utterly unrecognizable. Just on a personal note, I remember driving through this town in the days after. A lot of us from the city that I lived in, it's a larger city, came to help out and to help with the cleanup. And when I got there, the first thing that entered my mind when I saw the devastation was, this looks like Hiroshima after the bomb was dropped. Not that I was there when that, but you know what I mean? That's how much destruction was in this town. It looked just like someone had dropped a giant bomb in the middle of the town. That's how bad it was.
Those poor people.
Yeah, it was terrible. It took years to really clean that town up. But Coach Thomas was resolved, and he vowed that they would build back better than before. And he guaranteed that the local football team would play their first home game of the season in 100 days on their home field.
And wow.
Just a side note, the town did build back better. It's like great now. It's a they became like a green community, and it's
just that's neat.
A thriving, all these years later, you know, 16 years later, it's in really good shape now. But this was around the same time that Mark Becker moved back home with his parents. His brother could no longer deal with him. It sounds like he was hearing voices in his head. And he was just generally becoming very difficult to live with. So back home he went. But things didn't get better. In fact, they got progressively worse. He would have these delusions where he would be screaming at the top of his lungs in the middle of the night saying, quote, "They're hurting me. They're hurting me," end quote. But there was no one there. In one of these episodes, he even mentioned Coach Thomas, saying that he was going to have a talk with the coach to get him to stop bothering him, which I would say, red flag. You know, he hasn't been at school for almost 6 years at this point. Why is he thinking about the coach and that the coach is bothering him? You know, but these episodes began happening more and more often, and they were also getting more and more violent. He began to see faces in the trees watching him. He couldn't sleep in the basement of his parents' house anymore because he said there were demons down there. I mean, this is just a telltale case of schizophrenia here. just 4 days before Ed's murder, Mark was actually arrested in a high-speed chase after getting into an altercation with some guy. Apparently, he was yelling at this guy and even rammed his car into the guy's garage.
Jeez.
And when he heard the sirens from the police, he sped off and the officers were in pursuit. They almost lost him, it sounds like, but they caught back up with him when he was forced off the road by a deer. And the cops actually drew their guns on Mark right then, which, given what he had just done, is kind of understandable. But he immediately surrendered. He was lying down beside the road, and the police chief told his other men to stand down. So they withdrew their guns because the police chief himself knew Mark's history. Like I said, this was a small town, and he knew that Mark had a history of mental illness. So he was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. He knew that he was a sick individual.
And so hard.
It is. And Mark was admitted to a local mental health facility in Waterloo with assurances that he would be there for at least 6 days. 6 days. And his mom would later say that she was really relieved more than anything else, just because it was getting to be way too much with him.
Yeah, that's really hard to manage. I know there are a lot of like environmental factors to mental illness, especially houses you live in, food you eat, environmental factors.
Mm-hmm.
But that guy really, really needed like care.
He did. And that's why his mom was happy that, okay, well, maybe it's only 6 days, but at least he'll be getting the care he needs for that time. But
yeah, and they can take a mental break.
Unfortunately, that mental break only lasted 3 days.
Mm.
Because just 3 days later, Mark was released. And the crazy thing is the facility released him without notifying his family or the local Parkersburg Police Department, knowing what he had just done. Now, again, this is in another city, but they have all of this information. In my opinion, they were just being negligent.
Agreed.
His mom found out only when he called her asking to get a ride back from Waterloo, where the facility was. His mom even tried to call the agency that was working with Mark to see why he was released and if his stay could be extended. But when she called, apparently the powers that be weren't immediately available, and she was told to call back at 8 a.m. the next morning. Well, what good is that going to do?
No kidding. You know,
her son is basically out there in the middle of the street.
And he's a danger to himself and others.
Mm-hmm. So Jan Thomas, the wife of Ed, was a volunteer for the Parkersburg Ambulance Department at the time. Ed would always leave for work before Jan, as he would usually open up the weight room at the high school for the athletes and supervise the early morning weight training. Shortly before 8 a.m., Jan received a message on her pager that there had been a shooting at the school.
No.
Parkersburg Chief of Police Chris Luring also got a page that morning about the shooting. And needless to say, he was kind of dumbfounded. This town did not have shootings. They didn't have murders. And to have one at the high school in particular was just unthinkable. When the police chief got to the scene, he saw the horrific sight up close as Coach Ed Thomas was lying on the weight room floor, bleeding out from 6 to 7 gunshot wounds. A medical examiner would later add that Coach Thomas had also suffered blunt force trauma to his head, chest, and legs, which were caused by being stomped on after he was shot. And I heard an interview with Ed's son, Aaron, and this was many years later. And Aaron said, to this day, when he thinks about the day that his dad died, it's not necessarily the shooting, but knowing that he was stomped on that makes his blood boil the most, that makes him the most angry. Like you've already done enough damage. You've already shot this person 6 or 7 times, and now you're gonna stomp on them. And I can understand that. And despite all this, Police Chief Luring would later say that at the time he thought Coach Thomas was gonna make it. Perhaps because he was such a larger than life figure in the town, it was almost inconceivable. Ed Thomas couldn't die, but he was also praying as he heard the sound of the ambulance sirens getting closer and closer to the high school, Ryan. He was praying that Ed's wife, Jan, wasn't with them volunteering that day.
Oh my.
But Jan was on the ambulance that day, and she was still unaware that it was her own husband who had been mortally wounded. So when Jan arrived at the high school, Police Chief Luring kind of pulled her aside and told her the words that she had been dreading, that her husband, the love of her life, was the one who had been shot. Jan kind of waited outside for a while. It sounds like they told her not to go in, which is understandable on their part. But then she was just like, okay, I'm here. My husband is dying. I want to go in and see him. So she insisted on going in and seeing her husband. And she was able to see him, and he was still alive, but he was no longer conscious. And as they were loading him into the ambulance, she mentioned to the police chief that just based on her experience volunteering with the ambulance and based on the wounds that he had, that she knew it wasn't survivable. Ed didn't make it all the way to the hospital. He coded when the ambulance was en route to the city of Waterloo. Ed Thomas was just 58 years old. And just on a side note, when that went down, I mean, gosh, it was just crazy. I mean, again, I lived like a half hour away from there, but even everybody in our town knew who that guy was and knew how important he was to that community. And it was just, I've never seen anything like it, you know, on a local level. It was like a mythological figure had died, you know, and just a really good person. But that same morning, Mark's mother had gone to work, but it was decided that Dave, her husband, stay home that day and be with Mark. They didn't feel right about him being home alone. But while she was at work, she received a phone call from someone telling her that Coach Thomas had been shot. And she immediately called her husband and asked him if he had heard the news. He said that he had, and that they think Mark was the one who pulled the trigger. Now, I still haven't been able to figure out how Mark got out of the house without his dad knowing, but you know, he's a fully grown adult. He can figure these things out. And it was later determined that Mark had stolen one of his father's guns from his gun locker, put on a pair of his father's gray overalls, stolen his father's car.
Did Dad take a nap?
And drove it to the high school where he found Ed Thomas in the weight room. Yeah, he might have. I don't know. Or he just was watching TV and just, you know, wasn't thinking the worst that his own son was going to go do something like this. Afterward, he drove back to his parents' house after the shooting had taken place. And this I found interesting. Apparently, the cops were already waiting for him at his parents' house.
Shit. They moved fast.
Mm-hmm. Because in a small town, like I said before, everybody knows everybody's business, and they already knew who had shot Coach Thomas, and they knew where he lived. And just based on everything that had happened in the last few days with Mark, he was pretty much the only person who was a suspect. Not to mention, there were eyewitnesses who were there in the weight room who saw him shoot Coach Thomas.
Wow.
They will probably be forever traumatized by that, too. I mean, most of them were students. After they arrested him and they took him into the station, it didn't take long before Mark started talking. He willingly admitted to killing Coach Thomas, saying that he had a deep-seated hatred for the man and that Coach Thomas treated him differently than the other kids who played for him, which by all accounts is not true. Those who were around the two of them said the exact opposite, actually. They said that Ed actually worked harder with Mark than just about anybody. So let's play this clip here from the interrogation. It's only about 30 seconds long, and I'll transcribe it for you after it's done.
Devil's tired. He pressed children around here, and my family since I've been a little kid. Can't put up with it another second. We can hardly breathe at night because of that man. What did he do? He talks through it, he makes the turns into fish, he turns us into animals, and turns us into dead people. And he won't let us be our true heavenly selves. I think he's holy. Take him out because he's really the devil. He's being reasonable. The only way for the children to be free is if he was gone. I could see that visibly.
So I know that was difficult to hear, but I thought it was worth putting it in here just to give you a sense of how deranged this guy was while he was committing the murder of Ed Thomas. And he said, quote, "He's a devil tyrant, and he's been suppressing the children around here and my family since I was a little kid. I couldn't put up with it another second. We could hardly breathe at night because of that man." The officer then asks him, "What did Ed Thomas do?" Mark Becker replied, "He comes through and he turns us into fish. He turns us into animals and he turns us into dead people. But he won't let us be our heavenly selves. They just told me to take him out because he was being a devil. He was being Lucifer. The only way for the children to be free is if he was gone. I could see that visually." Clearly, he's having a schizophrenic episode, and nothing of what he is saying is making sense to us. However, it's making perfect sense to him at that moment.
Yeah, he genuinely believes what he's saying.
Yeah, he did. And that night of Ed's death, I told you that the town is only 2,000 people. Well, around 3,000 people, mourners, gathered for a candlelight vigil. And just a few days later, Ed Thomas was featured on the cover of Sports Illustrated magazine. at the time was one of the biggest magazines in the country. On August 28th of 2009, the national cable network ESPN actually televised his high school's first football game of the year in memory of Coach Thomas.
Wow.
He left an indelible impact on the community that is still being felt to this day, 15 years after his death. And it was kind of a slippery slope with Mark Becker here, because they first had to hold a competency hearing as to whether or not Mark was mentally competent to stand trial. Based on a multitude of evidence, and I'm not going to go into all of that right now, part of it was the fact that he had taken target practice that very morning of the murder. It was determined that he was mentally fit to stand trial.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I don't know how
it was premeditated. He definitely knew what he was doing.
On March 2nd of 2010, a Butler County jury convicted Mark Becker of first-degree murder in connection with Ed Thomas's death. Mark Becker received a life sentence for this conviction. The judge, Stephen P. Carroll, also ordered him to pay $21,000 in restitution, $150,000 to the coach's estate, and more than $70,000 for attorney and expert witness fees. Moments after the judge imposed the mandatory life prison sentence, he looked at Becker and said, quote, "May the judge have mercy on your soul." Becker left the courtroom in silence. Members of Ed Thomas's family approached the Iowa legislature to consider legislation requiring hospital personnel to notify law enforcement before releasing a psychiatric patient facing criminal charges. And on March 24th of 2010, the Ed Thomas bill was passed.
That's good.
So something good obviously came out of something
really ugly.
So tragic.
And it's what's really amazing, though, is that this Ed Thomas was, as a man, able to leave such an impact.
Mm-hmm.
And that his legacy is it's like the ripple effect. It's always the good ones that we end up are like, damn.
Yeah. Yep.
And this poor kid, yeah, they should not have released him without some kind of notification, a phone call.
Yeah.
Something. Make sure he gets picked up. Like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, because what do you expect is going to happen? You have to have some sort of plan in place. I mean, if you're a true mental health facility, I mean, you can't just, you know,
I'm sure they were
leave someone just to their own devices.
Speculation. I'm sure they were overwhelmed by him.
Yeah.
And potentially released him because he was just belligerently wanting to leave. And they're like, fine. Yeah. But you can't expect a mentally unwell person to be able to just get home if they're living in a different town.
Ed Thomas was also posthumously awarded the Arthur Ashe Courage Award at the 2010 ESPY Awards, which is a national show. And in August of 2011, there was a book that came out called The Sacred Acre, The Ed Thomas Story. And it was a book that was actually authored by the Thomas family along with Mark Tabb. And it told the story of his role in the town's recovery after that tornado, and also the details of his murder. Definitely a good book to pick up if you want to learn more about that impact that he left. But I was just thinking about this. There's so many little towns in America where there's these little heroes in these towns that most of us don't even know about, you know? And obviously most of them don't meet tragic endings like Ed did, but it does make you sit back and think about how lucky we are sometimes to have people like that in our lives, because there's a lot of them around, and we can think about all the terrible things that are happening around us and in our country. And some people can become so consumed by it that it takes over their daily life. But when it comes down to it, there's a lot of good people out there. And
well, and you can be the impact.
Yeah.
I don't know where all the critical thinkers have gone. I definitely see why we have to have so many warning labels on shit. Oh. But the best thing that a person can do is strive to be better. So if there are things about yourself that give you the ick, it's like, well, figure out why you do those things and let it go. Be the person you want to be. And it's so strange to think about it like this, but it's like someone described it as like building a character. Like if you're going to write a book and you had this character that did all of these, all these things, like these were parts of their routine or these are things that they do or habits that they have. And you just do them. You just embody those characteristics and you start acting like the character.
Yeah.
And then you automatically start developing more positive outlook on what you do with your time throughout the day. So yeah, it's great to have these little heroes, but it's like, be a hero in your story, be a good person, be a person who has good values, solid morals, be a great friend.
Yeah. But if you guys have any stories, local stories of hometown heroes like that, or anything you'd like us to hear or you want us to talk about, you can always find us over on our socials. You can find us on Instagram, Unnatural the Podcast. Check us out on Facebook, Unnatural, a True Crime Podcast. Send us an email on this case or any case you'd like us to cover, unnaturalthepodcast@gmail.com. And make sure to like, follow, and give us those 5-star reviews on Apple and Spotify. And we will talk to you next time. But in the meantime, be sure to make good choices.
And don't get got.
Who had been mortally wounded. 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 Can I say wounded? Who had been mortally wounded.
Thank you for making me laugh because I was like getting close to tears.
Just because I can't say wounded.
Like,
oh God.
I'm here having a moment and you just.
And then you keep hearing in your headphones.
Fuck me, you.
Me saying wounded. Wounded.
Mortally wounded.
I said wounded at first, like in the womb.
You're a trip. Like, there are individual men who is like, that dude's okay. But in general, it's disappointing.
I'm okay, right?
Yeah, you're
I love how I just really bring it down to a horrible level. we're happy, and I just tell you one of the worst fucking things ever.
It's somber.
Ryan's like, I'm just going to not say anything until I figure out what the fuck he's talking about.
I'm just over here eating my fruit snacks. Right. I'm like, brain is playing the Bluey theme song.
Oh, God. The Bluey thing. Yeah.
I can pee whenever I want. No litter box necessary.
Are you intrigued by the dark side of things like murder, kidnapping, and sex cults? What about when the criminal is your favorite musician or actor or director or writer? Hollywood might look like all glitz and glamour until you take a closer look. But I'll tell you one thing, that kind of point of view can make you more vulnerable. From Roman Polanski to Mackenzie Phillips to Judith Barcy to Kurt Cobain, some are predators and some are prey. I'm Dee Dee West, and I just might ruin your childhood. Follow my podcast, Broken Limelight, where I cover celebrity true crime stories. For more information, visit BrokenLimelight.com. Again, that's Broken Limelight. Follow it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts.